just days left in June, Baltimore has passed a disturbing milestone. With at least 150 homicides, the city is on pace to top 300 murders once again. In response, police commanders are now dispatching officers to the highest crime neighborhoods. They're required to spend 15 to 20 minutes per shift in several of those communities. Council President Brandon Scott says he's hoping the new strategy will be implemented fairly.
Right, we know that we don't want them out there picking up anybody for anything. I want them focusing on the people that are committing the violence.
But in a tweet, the Fraternal Order of Police questions whether the new strategy will be effective, especially with the department shorthanded by as many as 500 officers. City Councilman Zeke Cohen says that cannot be an excuse.
We do have a shortage of officers, but at the same time, we need to make sure we're deploying officers effectively and that they have a laser-like focus on reducing violence in our communities.
But Councilman Cohen says the police department alone cannot address the current cycle of violence.
This is about lack of access to jobs. This is about lack of a sustainable family-sustaining wage. This is about lack of investment in infrastructure, whether that be public transit or whether that be public housing.
That clip is courtesy of Fox 45. Folks, we are talking about Baltimore City. Now, we started this conversation yesterday. If you're just joining us, we were talking about the fact that this weekend, they were like, you know, all these folks were shot this weekend. Folks, there were 14 people shot in Baltimore City this weekend. Seven of them murdered. The Baltimore Police Union weighed in and said that we are a hashtag city in crisis. This time last year, we had 20% fewer shootings, so we've gone up. This time last year, we had nearly 20 fewer murders. So we're actually going in the wrong direction. I don't know if anybody's recognizing that but me. We're going in the wrong direction. We're not reducing crime and violence in the cities. We're actually increasing it by 20%. There's something wrong here. You couple that with homes, water crises, and folks, you have a city that is spiraling out of control. We have Larry on the phone from Baltimore. Larry, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Listen, I tripped up when I first heard Leo Burris bring up loitering because this morning I was on my way to work and I saw some people out early this morning, didn't look like they were going to work. And I, you know, of course I said, well, they're loitering. And it took me back to the days when there were anti-loitering laws that were being enforced. I remember when the police used to tell you, I want this corner, when I come back, it better be clear. And people actually respected it. I mean, they didn't respect it in the way that they, you know, that they were happy with it, but they moved off of that corner. Even if they came back sometime later, they moved. And, but, you know, I want to say this. I don't know how much loitering has to do with the murders that are happening, because okay, the murders, I think, are pretty much targeted in most cases, and loitering is random. You know, loitering actually, I think, is kind of cultural. I don't know if the two are directly related. And you had another caller that called in and talked about jobs being issued.
Right.
And lately, I've been saying, you know, you almost have to not want a job to not be able to get one with the employment rate being as low as it is. It's almost hard not to get a job, you know.
Well, you know that one of the things we saw this year, though, we did see, I think, 8,000 young people apply for a job with YouthWorks, and only 5,000 of them ended up with work. So we do have some people who are not employed in the city right now, young people who want to work.
Yeah, I understand that, but I just don't think that has a lot to do with the murder. And I know I'm going to get some haters about this. We talk about Black Lives Matter, and it just seems to me that it matters less to us than it does to the people we want it to matter to.
Oh, yeah, you're going to get some stuff on this one here.
Yeah, I know, but it, you know, it is. I mean, it's just like it is, like Jack Young was saying, that we want to kill each other over things that don't matter. It's not, you know, it's not worth the lives, you know, that we take. I think. But let me say this real quick. I had an idea when I was this morning when I was thinking about the loitering thing. One thing I noticed is that almost every parking space in the city has a handicap parking space.
Okay.
You know, so these are people who have made sure that they had some place to park when they come
right.
home. So now, if that was a community effort to combat loitering, if people would come together and say, okay, we don't want loitering in our neighborhood.
Okay.
So the same way we petitioned to get this parking space, if we petition to make this a no loitering area, then at least the people who live in that neighborhood will be doing something to keep the loitering from their neighborhood.
Okay.
And people who don't mind it, they don't have to do it, you know, because some people, and there are going to be a lot of people who are going to say, you're taking our rights to stand around, and you know, this is our culture. This is what we do.
I got to stop you there, Larry. Thank you so much. So, folks, we're putting solutions on the table. I'm going to Brian from Baltimore. Brian, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I think Kim was Trueheart.
Yes, Kim Trueheart.
The nail right on the head. Hello?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. I don't think the police, well, it's not the police's job. If we are looking for our solutions to our problems with violence and crime in our community, and if we're looking for police to solve that issue, we'll never get it. That's not their job. Police are enforcers of law. They come after the crime has been enacted.
Right.
And I think Kim was right that economics, the lack of economic opportunity, is a big problem. I disagree with the last caller. There are not plenty of jobs out here for everybody, and anybody who wants a job can just go out and get one. There are all kind of obstacles to people getting jobs, their location, transportation, what have you, education and training. But that's another issue. So the issue is not the police. The police are not going to save us.
Right.
We have to
Absolutely.
Save ourselves.
There you go.
And a big part of that work comes with education. That is a critical part of what's missing, and the value of education, and how we have devalued education. And my idea is that the more we have come to be more like our former enslavers, making gross materialism and things more valuable than we view our education, then that's what we want. So I want to get this fancy car. I want to have all these things. I want to have all this stuff, all these false needs and made up desires.
Right.
So I got to go out and do whatever I can to get it. But the key is we have to educate our people in a proper manner so
right.
that we do love and respect one another, that we do value our lives and our communities and each other.
All right, I have to stop you there, Brian. I appreciate you. Folks, we're going to keep the calls to just about 2 minutes. We'll make sure we get everybody in. We have so many calls. We want to hear from you. Curtis, you've been holding quite a while. Thank you for holding on, sir.
All right. I'm glad you noticed that, Dr.
Yes,
K. How
I did.
You doing today? All right. Dr. K, I want to say that, first of all, let me say I still respect Leo and agree with him.
Okay. I'm glad.
I also agree with the caller before the last one that you just had. Our problem, Dr. K, as a people is that we justify the behaviors of people that break the law. Period. We always, as black people, we always trying to use the justification, racism, unemployment, whatever. You can't justify it, Dr. K. I told you this a long time ago. You have to want something in life in order to accomplish anything or something. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying.
Dr. K. A lot of the people out here that's committing the crimes and breaking the law and all. And I used to be a lawbreaker, Dr. K. So I can speak on this, right? You gotta be willing to want to change for the better. You gotta be willing to want more for yourself. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying.
Dr. K, the thing about the lack of the jobs, there is no lack of jobs, Dr. K. If you want a job, there's plenty of opportunities out here. McDonald's, Burger King. Now, I'm not even just gonna point out fast food restaurants. My company, Hine, which I'm not even going to mention, always looking for help. starting off at more than $15 an hour. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying.
People, you got, look, when I came home from prison, Dr. K, I worked for $4.50 an hour job. You understand what I'm saying? And the reason I did that, Dr. K, my oldest brother said it'd get better. You understand?
Yes.
It'll get better because you got to crawl before you walk.
You actually
you're
do.
Trying to
you
get
actually
somewhere
do.
In life. You got to take baby steps and everything comes in time. If you put your mind into, you know what, I'm going to do this the right way instead of trying to get it the fast way, you're going to progress.
Now, let me ask you this, Curtis. Can I get you? I want to have you hold on because I want Justina to get your information. Because when you start talking about your company is offering jobs, you said $15 an hour, I believe you said. I want people to know how they can get in touch with you. Is that okay, Curtis? We want to get people in touch. Hold on 1 second. We have Sharla on the phone. Sharla's a new caller from Baltimore. Welcome to the family, Sharla.
Hi, thank you. You know, I disagree a little bit with Leo. He often has, you know, great things to say, but I don't think you can start restart some things that didn't work in the past to target, you know, African Americans. I'm not African American, but I understand the problem. I understand the issues from slavery on, and you know, if you keep targeting people, if you arrest somebody for loitering. And maybe you get a couple of drug dealers in that loiter,
but you
also get somebody who's got to go to work tomorrow, even if he's only working 3 days a week or something. And if he's in jail overnight, he can't go to work tomorrow, loses his job. You know what I'm saying? And it goes on and on.
Oh, I think it's I think it's a slippery slope. We know that
absolutely.
In Baltimore Center. It's a slippery
absolutely.
Slope. I appreciate you, Sharla. We have Marvin on the phone. Marvin is from Poe Homes. Now, folks, the word that we've gotten from Poe Homes is that things are still sticky and difficult down there. So I want to get a quick update from him. We're still going to talk about crime and violence. I think it's all connected. But, Marvin, how are you?
Is that me?
Yes, Marvin, I'm with you.
Well, it's Muhammad, darling.
Oh, it's Muhammad. I'm sorry. How are you, Muhammad?
Yes, Muhammad Ali.
Hello, Muhammad Ali.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm a member of the auxiliary tenant council out here right there. And let me tell you guys something right off the muscle. As far as the response, you know, the response of the housing authority, Janet Abel did a magnificent job. She responded in a timely and adequate, and guess what, effective manner, right? She got rid of our primary concern. Our primary concern was the private management company, you know, Edgewood Management, that was managing the property. They was not responding adequately. And, you know, I'm going to say it respectfully to our, you know, our requests, you know, as far as maintenance and personnel and that sort of thing. And then the water crisis happened, right?
Right.
But it's coming along. They got a temporary fix and they got pipes hooked up to the fire hydrant.
So is there water down there right now, Marv? If I go into any home in Poe Homes, they have adequate running water, not a stream, but a nice strong supply of running water.
Well, it has to build up. According to the one of the major maintenance superintendents, you know, new guy that's taken over. Right, I don't think. Probably to mention his name, but he said that at a meeting that we had the other day that it's going to take the water pressure to build up. We have a lot of us who on the bottom levels, you know, in the bottom single units, we have. Well, I know I do. I have optimum water range. You know,
okay.
I got water pressure, and they put a brand new dip. As a matter of fact, right now they're installing brand new toilets in the units. Right, so nice toilets too, and a lot of us. Are at optimum level, but then again, more than half of us are not. So water is still trickling down for people who live like on the second and third floor of these buildings, right? The water has to build up, and that's going to take time. And as a matter of fact, Ms. Abrams, right, the director of the housing authority, HABC, she said that they were going to put some residents up in hotels per diem.
Oh,
right.
Excellent. You know what, Marvin? I'm going to stop you right there because I want to go over to Ms. Tootie Brown. Tootie was on yesterday. She's also been covering what's happening down in Poe Homes. They're calling it the hashtag Poe Homes water crisis. Ms. Brown, how are you?
All is well. How are you?
I'm doing well. We just wanted to get a quick update. Marvin's giving us kind of the overview of the land. Anything that has changed? Are things getting better down there?
Well, Sai has some comments, and I have some as well. So Sai's going to go first.
Okay, Sai? Okay.
Yes. Hey, how you doing today?
Hello, Sai. What's happening down there?
Well, we was down there yesterday, and I was listening to the gentleman. We even have footage on our Facebook is that a lot of the residents, they may have some water, but it's trickling down. But even some of the residents have brown water, which is causing rashes on some of the residents.
Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. I want to be clear about that. Some residents are getting brown water, and as a result, they're getting rashes on their body?
Yes, correct. We spoke to them directly. We were dealing with the people directly. So here's the thing. We went to the community meeting yesterday because I don't like secondhand information. Me and
right.
And we listened to what Ms. Abraham and everybody talked about, and they actually, and I have it live on my footage. We recorded it. That they said they want to put up to 100-some people at that moment in hotels that they had contracts with. And the people that did not have adequate water. When they were supplying all the toilets, because they said replacing every toilet in each unit, we went into the home. First of all, they're not even securing the toilets properly. If you know, when you put a toilet in, you have to caulk around it. So that way it keeps it from leaking and keep it from moving. I have video footage of two toilets personally they installed, did not caulk them up. So they just throw them in. One of the tenants are disabled. When she sits on the toilet, it moves.
Wow.
And I asked the other young lady whose toilet was replaced yesterday, did the guy ever come back? Because he told Sai and I that he was coming right back. She said he never came back.
And that's a properly caulking. So just so we can be clear here, folks, we are just getting an update on the Poe Homes water crisis. One, we're finding that some people are getting water restored. The water's brown, so they're getting body rashes. We'll follow up with that and see what they need. Two, everybody's getting new toilets. And some of the toilets are not being properly caulked, so they don't move when you sit on them, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so what else is happening down there?
Well, they promised the people that they promised us, because I wanted to know, they had a meeting the day before yesterday, and they had a meeting to tell them, to see what the need was. And they had a meeting with Ms. Abraham and the rest of Abrams and the rest of them. And they were supposed to relocate the residents that wanted to be
right.
relocated, and found that they did not have adequate water pressure or water at all in the unit. So they promised me that they said they would replace all the toilets in the units as of yesterday. From there, they would make a determination if the residents that did not have adequate water or any water at all, they would relocate them to the hotels if their name was on the list by yesterday. Well, Tootie's going to tell you what happened.
Let me ask you this, Tootie. Now, I just want to, so people will know, if they want to get supplies or something, what's the name of your organization or your group if people wanted to follow up? Things like, when you talk about body rashes and things like that, it is concerning to hear. So are you inside with a group, or is just the two of you just kind of working, trying to get this information?
Sai has a nonprofit organization called We Feed the Need. I have a nonprofit organization called Helping the Least of Them.
Okay.
Sai and I are friends from years. So we collaborate together and do things together.
Okay, no problem. Helping the least of them, and we feed the need. Okay, no
yeah.
problem.
So okay, now, so yesterday, before we were leaving, it was about 8-something. I'm leaving out, and one of the residents, spoke. I said, hey, have a good night. She said, oh, no, I was looking for you. I said, what's up? What's wrong? She was like, I need to talk to you, but I need to talk to you in private. I can't be loud. And I said, okay. Everything okay? She says, well, they're putting us in a hotel. I said, oh, good.
Right.
She said, but it's only 10 of us that they're putting in a hotel. They called us from private numbers. They blocked their number out because they weren't even going to answer the phone because of the numbers that showed up, like all zeros were blocked.
Right.
She said, they told us they're only putting up 10 people to come around, don't bring anybody with them, and don't tell nobody.
Okay.
She said, I don't want to lose my room, but I don't want to get beefing with the people that are down there because they see me going, me and my family
right.
going to a hotel. So she says, now we have to go pick up the key first and then come back and pack our stuff and then go back to the hotel. So that's transportation to from that they don't have.
Right.
But they were providing transportation to the hotel for final for them to stay.
Right.
But they had to pick the key up first. So the guy that was there, I call him the Hamburglar because he was eating the hamburgers when we were down there. He's from housing. He was there to check them in and make sure they get the key. So I took 2 residents out of 10, and I saw another one when I was there. So they went in, and one of the residents that was in the car with me did tell me that she has a rash from the water. So I heard this firsthand.
Okay.
So they went in. I gave them a ride to pick up their key, and I gave them a ride back home.
Okay.
she said she's not getting on the van because she didn't want them to see, hey, wait a minute, where you and your family going? You know, why you? Why not all of us? And then she also didn't want to, it's like they're pitting them against each other. But she also, like, in fear, hey, if I leave and they know my house is empty, you know, my stuff may be missing when I come back. So she was, like, caught. But here's the other thing. They did all of this after 8 o'clock. So the lady said, oh, well, it's after 8. You don't qualify for a food voucher. That's the first thing.
Okay. So
second, they had to be out by 11 o'clock this morning.
Right.
But here's the deal. The move, they were moving anywhere between, when I bought her bag, it was about 9. They called her while she was in my car. Hey, what are you going to do? Are you taking a van or are you going to get a ride? You catching a bus? How are you going to get there? She said, I'm going to get a ride. So it's 9 o'clock, so that means they haven't left yet with anybody. You understand what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying.
By the time they get there and get settled, we're looking at, what, 10, about 11, between 11 and 12 o'clock, and then they have to be back out at 11 that morning.
Now, I want to put, because I know people are late, and I know it's a long story. My question is, Ms. Brown and Cy, and I appreciate both of you for chiming in, because it is very disturbing to hear that things are not moving forward. I mean, we definitely want to do more work and look into it. Is it possible that we can get, if people wanted to drop off supplies, if Justina can get like a contact number or an address, because it seems like people are still in need of things like, yes. I've heard bleach, I've heard toiletries. I mean, now, if you're talking about body rash, you're talking about hydrocortisone. So can we get that information from you, and we'll give it out as soon as we come back, so that way people can feel that they can do something to help?
Yes, it's on Lexington Avenue. We have the Lexington Street. We have the address.
Okay, hold on one second, Ms. Brown and Cy. Justina's going to get that. Folks, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm telling you, this Poe Holmes water crisis, between that and the number of people shot and the fact that BPU says they have no solution, I mean, we are a city in crisis on every single front right now. I want to talk about it with you. 410-319. When we come back, I'll have JR, F.A., Ernest, and you. So just hold on. Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, so I want to be clear about Poe Holmes. And the Poe Holmes water crisis is something that we are taking very seriously. You know that we have been on this issue ever since we found out about it on Friday. So we will keep you updated. We also want to make sure, as much as possible, that we're giving you the most accurate and up-to-date information. I just want to be clear. I want you to know that, you know, when somebody tells us something, we do the work. We do go find out, because we want to make sure that if you are springing into action, you're springing with the most accurate and up-to-date information. There are a lot of reports coming out of Poe Holmes right now, a lot. I don't live in that community. My team doesn't live in that community. We're only getting the comments and the calls from people, but we will follow up. What we just heard from Ms. Brown and Cy is a little bit disturbing to us. You start talking about body rashes as a result of the water. You start talking about, you know, moving people in the middle of the night, not letting anybody know. That requires a level of research, detail, and follow-up that we're going to do. So please stay tuned. We're going to get to the bottom of this, and we're going to let you know what is going on and give you the most accurate and up-to-date information. I also just want to remind you, on a much lighter note, that you've been hearing the commercials. This Saturday is our next meeting for our Itty Bitty Fan Club. For a moment here, I want to talk to my listeners under the age of 12. If that is you, this information is for your ears only. Because on Saturday, this Saturday, the 29th, we're going to meet at the Children's Bookstore, which is on 4717 Hartford Road, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. It is for our first summer meeting of the Itty Bitty Fan Club. You're going to get your membership cards. And let's not forget, when you have a Today with Dr. K Itty Bitty Fan Club membership card, there are all these stores on Hartford Road, and you get a 10% discount. So you can get ices, and you can get cupcakes, and you can get books with a 10% discount. We are going to sit. We're going to read many of my favorite books. I read all these books to you. Some of them you choose, and some of them I choose. We're going to have water and juice and snacks for you, but this is for the Itty Bitty Fan Club members. And if you show up and you already have your Itty Bitty Fan Club card from our last time we got together, you get double snacks. So you'll be able to get two things of cookies or two little things of chips. So we have that for you. For my Itty Bitty Fan Club, I look forward to meeting you on Saturday, 10 a.m., the Children's Bookstore. You can either call the Children's Bookstore to RSVP or just give Justine a call here, 410-319-8888 and RSVP. I want to make sure I have enough snacks for you. All right, folks, back to our conversation. This is for the adults now, Itty Bitty Fan Club. We've been talking about Baltimore City, a hashtag city in crises. And we had an update from Poe Holmes. And before that, we're talking about the fact that 14 folks were shot. Leo Burris called and gave us some solutions about perhaps drag netting the home city. Just drop in the armed guards, and people had some concerns, and they had some concerns about what Leo was saying. People mentioned Doc Cheatham. Folks, one of the wonderful things about this show, if people call your name out, you know, if they say that, I'm going to use Justina, my producer, as an example. If I call as an irate caller going, Justina did this, I'm inviting Justina to call the show because Justina should have the right to defend herself. Someone mentioned Marvin Doc Cheatham earlier, and so we put the call out. We of course, make the phones available, and, of course, he called. Mr. Cheatham, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Marvin the Doc, I'm not that old. And listen, the word was out, if you don't call the doctor's show, I'm going to be in trouble.
I'm telling you, we were looking for you. People were calling you, Doc. People were like, calling your name out. Doc Cheatham did this. So let's just get Doc Cheatham on the phone. And can you talk to us, at least from your perspective, now that we have cops talking about going into the micro zones, we have the Baltimore Police Union saying that we are a city in crises, the Baltimore Police Department say they don't have a plan for dealing with the crime. Doc Cheatham, help us out here. What actually is happening in this city from your perspective, and how can we begin to move forward?
Well, let me first say thank you so much for this opportunity. Myself and another longtime civil rights activist, Leo Burris, he and I are jointly collaborating for a major rally tomorrow to have the community come out and speak very strongly in support of the tenants and those around the Poe homes, what we can do to be of help, but also challenging the federal, city, and state officials to come and listen to the concerns that we have about how this whole situation was not handled properly, and the fact that not only must we make certain that these people living in these homes, our sisters, our brothers, our mothers, and fathers, are taken care of expeditiously, but we got to put things in place so we don't have this again. I am revisiting the failure of the city and the poor communications by the media. My neighborhood was the neighborhood hit hardest during the Freddie Gray riots. We were and are the Matthew Henson neighborhood. We had 14 businesses hit in our community, and there was just so much misinformation. And I guess the support that we expected to get, we never got. And it's unfortunate. I think the best thing that many of us can say is none of us have all the solutions, but all of us can do something to help us out of the quagmire that we're in. And Doc, I think you hit it exactly right. Just about every area that we can talk about, think about, or do something about, we're in a worse situation than we could ever be in, whether it's unemployment, whether it's education, whether it's crime, whether it's drugs. We're so far at the bottom. I don't see us getting any further below, but there's a God above. We got some great people in Baltimore City, and we all need to do what we can. Pick up the baton and do whatever it is you can. We can't all be saviors, but we all can help each other.
Let me ask you this, Doc Cheatham. Now, when Leo called earlier, Leo is a regular caller of my show. We love having him here. But he put out some radical ideas that got people going. I mean, he put out some radical ideas, including, you know, dragnetting certain communities and 13-year-olds and older having, you know, ID and being forced to show their ID when they're stopped. And, you know, videotaping folks for loitering and then arresting them or fine them if need be. So he got the phones going. So I just want to ask you, my last question with you, can you talk to us about another solution that you and Leo have come up with to deal with this crime? Because you said the two of you have been working out these strategies.
Well, people need to understand this. Leo has been in the civil rights era for about 60 years. I've been involved in it for a little more than 50 years. So we're not new people to civil rights. But we're saying, for the most part, that we're trying to come up with solutions that are out of the box. We have done things over and over and over, and we have not come to solutions. Now, I don't know exactly what Leo discussed.
Leo got him going, though.
before I left my house, I got a call. I just talked to Leo three times a day about tomorrow's event. He said, Leo, Doc, they're hitting me upside the head. I said, well, Leo, I got a few lumps on my side of my head as well. But I don't think too many people can really challenge the love that Leo Burroughs had. Leo goes all the way back to the times when the NAACP was having problems, and his organization, the CIG, was very much involved. Folks hadn't even heard of what a CIG was. Well, that was one of the real activist organizations. While the NAACP was considered to be mild-mannered, Leo evidently said some things to let folks know he's not as mild-mannered.
No, he's not.
But I tell folks, you know, you can't find a brother that's more committed and more concerned.
We have a big love for Leo here. Doc Cheatham, thank you so much for calling in. We definitely appreciate you.
Anytime I get the call, if I don't call, I can't ever go back to WEA.
Always a pleasure to help you, then. Just have you on the show. So, folks, we're going to continue with the calls. I want to let you know where you're in the queue. Some of you have been waiting a long time. We're going to go to Ernest first, and after Ernest, Ife, don't hang up. We're coming to you next. And then we have J.R. Carter, and I believe Leo might be calling back. If so, we're going to put him on, and then we also have Al. But we still have a line open for you, 410-319-8888. Ernest, you've been holding a while. Thank you for holding on.
Yes, Dr. K.
Yes.
You were talking first about the Fraternal Order of Police.
Yes, sir.
I got the list of the people that talk for the Baltimore City Fraternal Order of Police.
Okay.
One is Mike Mancuso.
Yes, I believe that is. He runs the president. That
Then
yes.
They got a first vice president, a second vice president, a third vice president, a secretary, a treasurer, a guard, a state trustee, a chaplain, and commissioners of trustees, and it's three individuals in that. All these people are elected by members of the Fraternal Order of Police.
Okay.
Sergeant Boatwright's name is nowhere on here.
Oh.
So he should not be speaking for the Baltimore City Fraternal Order of Police.
Okay. That makes sense.
That's now, right. It makes sense.
Now, we saw the tweets from the Baltimore Fraternal Order of the Police. We saw what, and I'm assuming it's Mike Mancuso because I've been told he handles that Twitter feed. We were looking at what he tweeted out, and that's what we were discussing.
Let me tell you what he was saying.
Okay.
You definitely don't understand it.
Obviously not.
What he was saying was this. With this Commissioner Harrison coming in, this black commissioner, he locked up a 24-year-old sergeant for something that we usually do and lie. He was mad about that. He's mad because Harrison is going to release tapes of what's going on immediately. So his conversation was not really to police officers. His conversation, he's talking to white people saying that this city is in trouble. He's talking about the thin blue line.
Okay.
That white people have between white people and black people. That's what he's talking about. He's not worried about shootings and killings, and he wasn't worried about the Gun Trace Task Force.
Okay. All right, so he was talking to the white community. So when he said things like Mayor Young and Councilman President Scott should not confuse fiscal responsibility with the fact that people are dying and Baltimore police has no crime plan to stop it, he was only talking to white people.
He's talking to white people.
Okay.
He's talking to white people, and that's the white supremacist way of doing it. And white people know he's talking what he's saying. But he's mad with Commissioner Harrison. And he's mad with anybody that goes against a police officer because that's his job. He's the president of the Fraternal Order of Police.
Okay.
His job is to protect police officers, whether they're criminals or not. That's
all right. Thank you so much, Ernest. I appreciate you. So, folks, we're going to keep it going. We have Ife from Baltimore. Ife, how are you?
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling and for holding on.
Oh, I was holding on. I almost took a nap. But seriously, I think that we're throwing out solutions, possible solutions that will have long-term effects on the young people in our communities. And it's something really, really simple that can help. And they seem to want to go to extreme and damaging measures instead of the ones that would really be helpful. Because after all, these young men, young women, they're going to be citizens. They're citizens, and they're going to be older citizens one day. That doesn't mean that we're not going to need them. We're going to need them. How about something simple like the churches getting together and starting maybe some kind of job program for these kids? They could help the elderly with their chores around the house, keep the yards clean, do the gardening, whatever, you know, cutting the lawns, whatever. But you first try something simple and least damaging before you go into something extreme. That's saying make all our kids criminals. And you already know my opinion. They always demonize our children.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Thank you so much, Ife. Folks, I just want to do a correction to something that Ernest said. He went through and he listed all of the folks from the Fraternal Order of the Police, from Mike Mancuso down. He said Sergeant Clyde Boatwright's name is nowhere on the list. I want to restate that Sergeant Clyde Boatwright is not only the president of the school police union, he's the first vice president at the Maryland Fraternal Order of Police, which means he actually can speak for them, which is why we reached out to him to ask his opinion. And I don't have to defend Sergeant Boatwright. He's able to defend himself. I'm sure he'll call back and say that. But before he does, I've already said it. Sergeant Boatwright is the first vice president and can speak on this. We have J.R. Carter on the line. J.R. has been holding. Thank you so much, sir. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Dr. K?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good, good. I just wanted to call and make a suggestion. I think that we need to use the technology and the mediums that we currently have available to us. There needs to be a real-time task force where you can text videos, information, and pictures to the Baltimore Police Department, and then they can disseminate that to the officers in real time who are working in that particular community. I think oftentimes we fail to remember that, you know, these officers show up in the blind. They don't know who's there. They don't know what's really going on. They're just simply responding. I think that since we use social media for everything else, that needs to be incorporated into the police department. People have to get out into the community and use mediums like the Penny Saver or mailers. When we have high crime areas like we have currently that we've identified, we need to do mailings in those areas and let the citizens know. If you see something in this community, if you have a video, if you saw something on the news and you can see that car, take a picture. Send it in. Okay, remain anonymous, but send it in. That way we can have the officers.
Right, that's a good point.
Real time. Real time. Secondly, older people aren't using that type of technology, so we need to use things like the Penny Saver to send information to them as well through the mail. That way they can also participate in the process of getting information about the officers who work in their community. So they can also reach out and say, hey, I saw something. I saw it again today. I saw it over and over. Can I send a text to an officer and have somebody respond real time to let them know this is what's going on there? The other thing, the last part is, since there seems to be a shortfall of officers in Baltimore City, and we're always bringing up the Baltimore City school police officers, is there a way of drafting them, especially during the summer months when schools are closed, to incorporate them to help out with the Baltimore City Police Department to at least patrol some of these areas and be visible in the communities that need to reduce crime in those areas? That's all I have.
I appreciate you, JR. We have Al on the phone from Baltimore. Al, how are you?
I'm fine. Excuse me. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Dr. K, you know, I really would like to speak to you alone in private, so I feel I have to say. I don't really want to put it out there, okay?
Okay. All right, so why don't we have you hold on, because what you can do, Al, which is great, you can tell that information privately to Justina, and she will definitely get the information to me. Folks, we love talking on the phone, and we love talking here and sharing ideas. You already have the anonymity of the radio, so it's not like anyone's going to know who you are unless you're very well-known in the community, and that's your own thing. But you're free to speak with me, and this can feel like a private conversation between the two of us right here on the radio. I believe Leo Burrows has called back. Leo, how are you, sir?
Dr. Gay-wise Whitehead, they try to beat me up. Let me briefly respond. I am not in the employ of the Fraternal Order of Police, and I'm not being paid by the Democrats or Dixiecrats or anybody else. The ideas that I advance are my own, and I'm not being paid off to represent the white racist establishment in this city. And let me conclude on this note. I'm in agreement 100% with Kim Trueheart. Jobs, 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 and job training as priority. The youth works program, year-round program, we got to have it. The city's got the money to pay it. Jack Young can make history if he will ensure that the youth works program become year-round. We should patrol our own community, our own neighborhoods. We can do that. That doesn't mean we get rid of the police, but we can have citizens on patrol or citizen safety patrol if we have the guts to do it. We can do it legally. The law does not prohibit citizens from setting up their own crime watch initiatives. The student who hit the teacher at Douglas High School, what I would have done, you bang the teacher, I lock you up, and after we lock you up, we get some counseling, we pray with you. But initially, I'm very tough on crime. If you commit an offense and you're wrong, teenager or otherwise, I want you initially to go to jail. And that has not been the strong arm that should have been manifestly brought forward by the Baltimore Teachers Union or the administration of the Baltimore City Public Schools. We must have law and order, and we must have first priority economically given to our youth and our children. Of the numbers of police, Fraternal Order police, I heard about the school police. Do you know their numbers have been reduced?
Yes,
were reduced over the last 2 years, and at least 40 to 50 officers have been eliminated from the payroll. So it's okay to have, and they have jurisdiction throughout the area, but if you keep cutting back on the number of officers to serve the public schools, how can you expect them to augment or supplement the force of the Baltimore City Police Department? It's not going to happen. So, yeah, you need tough cops who abide by the law and abide by the constitutional mandate that says fair play for every citizen. Police brutality should be rewarded with termination and firing.
All right. Thank you so much, Leo. We appreciate you calling back. I know Leo is a frequent caller of the show, folks. And the comments he put out there, people had to respond. And you can. That's the wonderful thing about a show that belongs to all of us. Your name comes up and you want to respond. You need to call and respond. We have Nurse Will on the phone. Nurse Will, how are you?
I am fine, Dr. K. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
Woo, you pushed that button today. let me just say this briefly as I can. You know, we need a temporary and a long-term plan to fix this city. You actually, we need the militia as you described them. I would say to you, yes. If we are 500 police officers, soldier, militiamen down, and we're constantly having 300-plus murders a year, there's an immediate fix that needs to be had.
Right.
I've spoken to you before in the past about things of legalizing hard drugs such as heroin.
Yep, you did
actually enforcing some of the laws that are on the books and codes on the books, such as public nuisance. We know we have businesses that are contributing or turning a blind eye to the drug activity that's going on their property. they are responsible for not having that or allowing that. So therefore, they bear responsibility if the commissioner closes their establishment. But folks need to understand this other part. In order to get those jobs in the community, there has got to be change, whether we like it or not.
Right.
And that takes money, and that's investors. And the only folks that are going to invest are those who see there's something in there that they can benefit from to bring them money back. And that's going to change the color and the structure of the neighborhood. And that's something that you have to seriously understand, that if you want the change that you want, you got to make some change and give some things up. You know, because otherwise, we're going to have the political folks and the police officers and everybody else strip this city clean.
I agree. So we need to do more than that. Thank you so much, Nurse Will. I appreciate you. We have Johnny on the phone. Johnny, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
We're at war. Bring the military in.
Whoa.
That's all I got to say. I'm sorry. You got to get a stop. Bring the military in. You've got to bring the military in. That's the only way you're going to stop this here. It's out of control. You bring the military in. We're at war.
Wow.
Let these people know we're not playing. We're sick of this. We are sick of it.
Well, I'm agreeing with you.
In.
I'm agreeing with you.
Dr. K.
Thank you so much. I'm agreeing. Well, let me say what, you know what, let me be clear. And Justina's looking at me. Let me be clear about what I agree with, okay? So not a blanket, I agree with you. I agree that we are at war. I agree that we're all tired of this. I agree enough is enough. I agree with all of that. I am not in complete agreement with shutting the city down and turning it into a militia state, that we need to have the armed guards tracking us. Now, I want people to remember now, during the Baltimore uprising, when we were under Mayor Stephanie Rawlins Blake, and you had Governor Hogan saying, I have the armed guards standing by. I just need Stephanie Rawlins Blake to call for it. And she did. And when that happened, it seems like we only had the armed guard in certain communities, the communities we're talking about throwing the blanket around. I don't know if that is the solution, folks. We want to bring in the armed guards to do this? That's going to be a different thing happening in this city, because it doesn't happen in every community. We're talking about bringing in the armed guards into the predominantly African-American community. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about connecting that to class issues. I just think that we need to seriously consider what's going on. We are trying to figure out what is the direction that we can go forward. We're trying to figure out where do we go from here, and we're trying to get some solutions. I know that this conversation is going to have to continue. We know that it's not over yet, and I know the phone lines are lighting up, and I know we cannot continue, but this will not be the last time that we cover this. If we are indeed a city in crisis, then we have to figure out some solutions. Here's what we're going to do. Tomorrow at 3 p.m., we're going to have our weekly wrap. During the weekly wrap, Justina and I are making the commitment now to get some answers for you about what is happening in Poe Homes. There's a lot of rumors. There's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of guesswork happening. We will get some clear answers, even if it means Justina and I take a trip down there. Maybe we'll just go down there tomorrow morning, Justina. Yep, you know what? We're just going to go down to Poe Homes in the morning. We'll figure out what's going on. We'll see it for ourselves, and then we will report out on that. And then we'll have our weekly wrap. That's that time of the week. You can put anything you want on the table. Keep it here, folks, because up next is For the Culture with Faraji. Remember what Angela Davis said: I am no longer accepting the things I cannot change. I am changing the things I cannot accept. Meet you tomorrow at 3 p.m. It's been an honor and a privilege.